turning astray of the path that was left long ago. All we leave behind, time after time, is a legacy with nothing to show. Now our country is lost, and it's not without cost, for there's many who struggle every day. And I think that it's time we start crying for our nation and bow our heads and pray. If today you lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see? What happened in the day?
Hey everyone, this is Steve Donahue with another episode of the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. Today's episode is 119, and this is going to be a message that is recorded from the sermon that I delivered this last Sunday at the church in which I pastor, Mount Tabor Baptist Church, from 1 Samuel chapter 17. Probably one of the most popular passages of all of the Old Testament. Most everybody knows the story of David and Goliath, but hopefully my presentation of it will be helpful for you anyway. It deals a lot with the whole concept of what our perspective is, how we see things, and it should be a good message for you, so stay tuned for that. But before we do that, I want to take care of a little bit of business. First of all, make sure that you're following us on all the various social media, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and iTunes. And then also, we are on Stitcher Radio now. So if you download anything from Stitcher Radio, just search for Legacy, and we're number one on there. So if you will download us from there or listen to us that way, we'll also be able to keep that ranking. So I appreciate you doing that. And then also, make sure that you're a registered user. If you want to get updates through email, anytime that there is a change to the website, you'll be notified by email. This helps you to make the most of your time so you don't have to keep checking back, although certainly you can do that. And then thirdly is make sure that you are visiting our affiliates and helping to support the show by doing that. The two that we have for today, the first one up is Liberty Classroom. Liberty Classroom is a great resource. For $99 a year, you have access to all the resources that are there, including the two semesters of Western Civilization history, and then two semesters of American history. There's a course in economics, Austrian economics, introduction to Austrian economics, and then which is basically free market capitalism. And then there is also a logics course on there. So all that you can get. There's visuals you can download. There is a video you can watch of the lecture itself. You can just listen to it through a podcast or through MP3 player, that kind of thing. So there's all kinds of ways in which you can listen to it, benefit from it. Just a great resource. All that for $9. You can't beat it, especially if you've got homeschool kids who are high school age and want to know what kind of curriculum to give them for history. This would be the place to go. So check them out. And then second up is Gurney's. And now's the time to start buying your seeds for this spring. In fact, I just planted a bunch of stuff. I'll hopefully be able to give a video out here soon of the swales that I did and some of the planties that we put in there, as well as some of the planties that we put into the greenhouse, that kind of thing. And so now's the time to order seeds. Best place to do that online, as far as I am concerned, is Gurney's. They have a wide selection of vegetable seeds and super, super low cost. In fact, there's a discount there on the website. If you go in there, there's $20 off for a $40 order. And you can order not only seeds there, but you can also buy shrubs and trees and bushes and things like that. I just put in five raspberry bushes and an almond tree, all from Gurney's. And so check them out. And then lastly is, if you want to support the show, the best way to do that is become a Legacy Partner. You know all about that. Check it out if you want to become a Legacy Partner and support the show that way. And then that takes care of the introductory business. Now let's go ahead and listen to the message that I delivered to the church in which I pastor, Mount Tabor Baptist Church, this last Sunday from 1 Samuel chapter 17. Sometimes life is all about our point of view. I remember just a few days ago, Timothy wanted me to hold him. I was taking turns. They were both been sick, and so they needed some extra holding time, which I don't mind at all. That's kind of nice sometimes. I don't like them being sick, but the extra snuggle time is good. And so I was holding Mary, and Timothy got a little jealous. I was holding her too much, so he asked me to hold him. He wasn't quite as sick, and so I held him. And as soon as he gets there, he goes, "Oh, this is tall." It was all a matter of perspective. He just, you know, you forget how tiny a kid is, you know, and how everything's so big. And then when you're holding them and you're walking around, they're like, man, this is pretty neat, you know, it's pretty tall up here. It's all a matter of point of view. And that's true in a lot of different ways, not only physical, but also spiritual. Today what we're going to look at is we're going to look at 1 Samuel chapter 17, which is probably one of the most popular stories in all of the Old Testament. In fact, we probably don't even need to turn there, although you certainly can if you want to, but you've probably heard it from being a wee little tyke in Sunday school, and how you've heard it over and over again, the story of David and Goliath. And it has been turned into television, movies, it has been illustrated in comic books, it has been coloring pages on it. You can find it in all different kinds of resources everywhere. And so most everyone is familiar with the story of David and Goliath. And sometimes it is told as a story of faith and courage. Sometimes it's told as a story of unbelief and wickedness. Sometimes it's told from the perspective of victory against great odds. But today what I want to do is I want to look at it from the perspective that I think that God designed for it to be understood in. And that is in the context of chapter 16. That's why I read chapter 16 first. And in chapter 16, verse 7, when all of the sons of Jesse are going before Samuel to determine who it was that's going to be anointed next as the king, he starts with the oldest one. That's the one that everybody would think would be the king. He's probably the tallest. He's probably the strongest. He's probably the most mature physically. And so they're thinking, that's the one that we should have as king. Well, of course, what happens? Eliab comes before him and God says, oh, that's not him. And he explains why in verse 7. But the Lord said to Samuel, do not look at his appearance or his physical stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord does not see as man sees, for man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. You see, it's a matter of perspective. It's a matter of point of view. And in the story of David and Goliath, we see that there is a real contrast between the way that everybody looks at the situation except for David. So let's go ahead and look at the story itself. And in verses 1 through 3, we see that the battle lines are set. And there is this valley that on one side, all of the Philistines come. And on the other side, you have Israel. And of course, the Philistines are the enemy of Israel. God had commanded the Israel when they go in the promised land to defeat all the Philistines and to take them out of the land. And they failed to do it. And so some of them were left. And they continue to be a thorn in the flesh. And they are now challenging Israel to battle. For 40 days, they had lined up on each side, waiting to do battle. The problem was that there was a challenger by the name of Goliath of Gath. And we see his description in verses 4 through 7. Excuse me. So Samuel did what the Lord said and went to Bethlehem. I'm sorry, that's 16. Chapter 17, verse 4. And the champion went out from the camp of the Philistines, named Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. You know how tall that is? It's big. 9 foot plus. Huge. All right, now I'm about 6 feet. If I raise my hand up, that's almost 8 feet. So another foot beyond me. And that's Goliath of Gath. Huge guy. All right, so he would come out, says verse 5, he had a bronze helmet on his head. Now, bronze, of course, is hard to cut through, isn't it? If you can reach his head. He had armor, coat of mail, and the weight of his coat of mail was 5,000 shekels of bronze. You know how much that is? 125 pounds. Sam, you weigh about 120 pounds, don't you? 125 pounds. So imagine the armor weighing as much as Samuel does. But it gets better. Verse 6, he had bronze armor on his legs and a bronze javelin between his shoulders. Now the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his iron spearhead
weighed 600 shekels. You know what that is? 15 pounds. So kind of how I imagine it, his spear was probably about as long as this flagpole. And at the end of it was this metal or iron-bronze combination type spearhead that was 15 pounds in weight. I mean, this is like a tank coming out before Israel. And it says, and the shield bearer went before him. Now, it doesn't say how big his shield was. But my guess is that the shield bearer was probably carrying it like this in front of him. And it was probably all he could do to carry the shield. And, of course, the shield probably only went up to right about here over Goliath. I mean, this guy is a big, formidable enemy. At least that's the perspective of man, right? So, verse 7. And then verse 8 says, then he stood and cried out to the armies of Israel and said to them, why have you come out to line up to battle? Am I not a Philistine? And you the servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants and serve us. So what he's doing here is he's doing something that was very common in battle in the ancient Near East. Rather than having all of these enemies fight and kill lots and lots of people, typically what they would do is they would have a champion. One side would choose their champion, and the other side would choose their champion, and those champions would duel. And whoever would win, that side was considered the winner. And the other side would submit to that side. So really, he's doing nothing out of the ordinary, what would be common in battle in those days. And so he comes out, and of course, he's the champion of the Philistines. Comes out 9 foot tall with all this stuff, and he comes out and he says, all right, pick yourself a champion, Israel. Come out and fight with me. The only problem was, all Israel was afraid. They didn't want to pick a champion. Now, the likely champion would be who? Saul. Right? Isn't Saul the king? He kind of makes reference to that. He says, are you guys not the people of Saul? Pick yourself a champion. And the idea would be the Israelites should have been chanting back there, Saul, 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 Saul. And Saul would have got enough masculinity up. He would have put on his arm. And he would have gone out and fight against Goliath. That was what the idea should have been. But Saul wasn't doing that. And so in verse 9 it says, or verse 10, and the Philistine says, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we might fight together. And when Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Now, I love the way the scriptures refer to things sometimes. the New Testament says it this way a lot. And they were not a little afraid. Understatements, right? Well, the idea here of dismayed and greatly afraid, if you look at the original language, what it means is they were cowering in their boots. They didn't want to face this guy. They were huddled in their tents. People would probably come into Saul's tent and say, Saul, what are we going to do? And Saul probably said, I don't know. I don't want to fight. They were at a loss. So 40 days this happens. Goliath every day would come out and says, choose yourself a champion. And every day Israel would sit in their tents, afraid to go out. Verse 12. Now David, there's a change of pace here. Remember I mentioned before in the scriptures how sometimes it says, and this happened, and this happened, and this happened, and this happened. Now David. Or you see this in the first two chapters of Genesis, where it says, and the first day, and the second day, and the third day, and the fourth day, and this happened, and this happened, and this happened. And then chapter 2 it says, now man. And so the way the Hebrew writes is they bring in this transition to emphasize now there's going to be a change in the story. And what do we find with the change in the story? David comes on the scene. It says, now David was the son of the Ephraimite of Bethlehem of Judah, whose name was Jesse, and who had 8 sons. Now we just got introduced to him earlier in chapter 16, right? And yet, in case we had already forgot one chapter of what took place here, we are reminded of that. And the man was old, advanced in years in the days of Saul, and three oldest sons of Jesse had gone to follow Saul to battle. So they're already out there. They're among these Israelites who are afraid. The three oldest ones, the ones that were supposed to be representing the father. That means they were probably 20 years old and above, because that was the fighting age in Israel. So here's these 20-something young men out fighting with Israel's army. David obviously was under 20, and so he was left with some of the responsibilities of taking care of the animals. It says the names of his three sons who went to battle were Eliab, the firstborn, the next, Abinadab, and the third, Shema. David was the youngest, and the three oldest followed Saul. Verse 15, and David occasionally went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. So he would kind of go back and forth, check up on his brothers, see what was happening with the Israelites' army, report back to the father and say, no, they're still alive, Goliath hasn't killed them yet. Of course, he hadn't been introduced to Goliath yet, that wasn't part of the situation. Verse 16, and the Philistines drew near and presented themselves 40 days, morning and evening. Verse 17, then Jesse said to his son David, take now for your brothers an ephah of this dried grain and these 10 loaves, and run to your brothers at the camp, and carry these 10 cheeses to the captain of their household of thousands, and see how your brothers fare, and bring back news to them. So in other words, he's saying, look, here's some food, some supplies, excuse me. Okay, you need some water. and then here are some supplies. Send them on to your brothers in the Israelite camp. See how they're doing. Now, I think it's interesting here that Jesse also sends on some cheeses and some extra things to the captain. Why do you think he did that? So that the brothers might have some favorable positions in battle, right? And might be able to return home. So he's kind of working his system here a little bit. Verse 19, so Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. They weren't really fighting, they were just lined up to fight. Verse 20, so David rose early in the morning, left the sheep with the keeper, and took the things and went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the camp as the army was going out to fight and shouting for the battle. For Israel and the Philistines had drawn up in battle array, army against army. And David left his supplies in the hand of the supply keeper, ran to the army, and came and greeted his brothers.
Thank you.
Then as he talked with them, there was the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, coming up from the armies of the Philistines, and he spoke according to the same words, so David heard them. So here David goes out to see the Israelites and to see what's going on, bring back news to his father. And while he's there, he sees Goliath come out, as he did every day for 40 days. And he hears what Goliath is saying. Bring out a champion. Fight with me. Duel with me. Aren't you guys the people of God? Show yourself. So verse 24, all the men in Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were dreadfully afraid. So to me, this is kind of how I picture what happened. Every day, the Israelites would get up. All right, today's the day of battle. We're going to go out and fight these Philistines. We're going to take care of them. They get on all their armor, right? And they gather all ready for battle, and they start lining up. Start marching down the valley, and then all of a sudden, Goliath comes out. And Goliath comes out and says, who's going to fight me? And all of a sudden, they go, And they go back to their tents and say, oh, no, maybe not today. Maybe tomorrow we'll fight. And that's kind of how I picture it. David comes, he sees all this going on. So in verse 23, then he talked with them. There was the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, coming up from the armies of the Philistines. And he spoke according to the same words. So David heard them, and all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were dreadfully afraid. Verse 25, so the men of Israel said, have you seen this man who has come up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel, and it shall be that the man who kills him, and the king will enrich with great riches, will give him his daughter and give his father's house exemption from taxes in Israel. All right, so here's huge incentive. Saul's a coward. He won't do it. He's in his tent cowering away, but he's willing to give some, you know, some reward money to get rid of Goliath. So he says, this is what I'm going to do. Anybody who's strong enough to go and kill Goliath, No more taxes for you and your family. Pretty cool. I'll also give my daughter to whoever this hero is in marriage. And I'll also give a whole lot of riches. I mean, here's a guy that's set, right? Any of these Israelites at this point could have said, man, that sounds pretty good. I'm at least going to give an attempt. Might die a hero, but I'm going to try it. But not a one did it. Except for David. Verse 26. Then David spoke to the men who stood by him, saying, what shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? You notice, you can already see the change of tone here with David. Here we have the Israelites. They see him more than they run away. David comes out and he sees it and he says, who's this guy? Why is he calling our God names? Why is he mocking us? Aren't we the people of God? You can already see kind of a change of perspective here that's taking place with David. Verse 27, the people answered him in the manner saying, so shall it be done for the man who kills him. So they're all saying the same thing. He's getting the same testimony from all of them. They've heard it over and over again. Saul probably every day walks in front of the line of the army and says, all right, men, I don't know whether we fight today or not, but I'm looking for a champion. Champion's going to take on Goliath. Whoever wins is going to have my daughter in marriage. I'll make him very wealthy. And he'll be exempt from taxes. Do I have any volunteers? Of course, no volunteers, right? So he's heard this. All the people knew what was going on. Then verse 28. Now Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to these men. And Eliab's anger was aroused against David, and he said, why did you come down here? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your pride and the insolence of your heart, for you have come down to see the battle. In other words, Eliab's looking at him now. Eliab may be a little bit jealous already, because we realize in chapter 16, Eliab was passed over. You remember that? But David was the one that was chosen of the sons of Jesse. So Eliab may have said, now I'm not quite sure exactly what David's role is going to be here in the future, but Samuel just anointed him for something special. And he didn't anoint me. And I'm the oldest. I was the one that's supposed to be anointed. And now David comes out here to see what we're doing. He should be back there with the sheep. I mean, he's not old enough to be out here battling. And so you can see he's already a little bit jealous. He's looking at David from the wrong perspective. Verse 29. And David said, what have I done now? Is there no cause? Then he turned from him towards another and said the same thing, and those people answered him as the first one did. Now when the words which David spoke were heard, they were reported to Saul, and he sent to him. So Saul hears, hey, there's a guy that might want to battle, or at least he's standing up verbally to Goliath. You might want to talk to him. So Saul calls for David. David comes into Saul's tent. Verse 32. Then David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight this Philistine. Way to go, David. Verse 33. And Saul said to David, you're not able to go against this Philistine. I mean, look at you. You're a youth. And he a man of war from his youth. So, what's Saul's problem? He's looking at David from man's perspective, isn't he? He's looking at David and he's saying, wait, hold on a second. You've got three older brothers here. And they're not able to go out and fight against him. What makes you think you're going to be able to go out and fight against him? I mean, look at you. You're young. You're a little guy. You're the youngest in the family of Jesse. Are you really going to fight him? And now, there's some challenge here chronologically, because we know that David had already been in Saul's court for some time. Chapter 16, at the end of chapter 16, we see that he'd been playing the harp in Saul's court, which you can already kind of think what Saul's thinking here. If he realizes this is the same guy, he's thinking, hold on a second. Aren't you the guy that plays the harp for me? How are you going to go out and fight this guy? I mean, you're a musician. So what does David say? Verse 34. But David said to Saul, your servant used to keep his father's sheep, and when a lion or a bear came and took out the lamb out of the flock, I went out after it and struck it and delivered the lamb from its mouth. And when it arose against me. I caught it by its beard and struck and killed it. Your servant has killed both lion and bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing that he's defied the armies of the living God. See David's perspective? David said, what more is this guy than these lions and bears? And I find it interesting that a shepherd's main danger is a coyote, isn't it? I mean, that's what wants to get in there and get the lambs and gets the sheep and things like that, the wild dogs. And we'll see in just a moment how Goliath responds to himself in reaction to David coming out. He calls himself a dog. And that's really kind of how David's looking at this Goliath. He's saying, look, here's the shepherd, the people of Israel, the sheep of Israel, God's people. And they're in danger by this Goliath. I'm going to go out, just as I did with all these other dangers to the sheep back home. I'm going to go out and take care of this guy just the same way. So verse 37. Moreover, David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, go, and the Lord be with you. You see David's perspective there? David said, it's the Lord who's going to deliver me. Just as the Lord delivered me from all the things that would come in and destroy the lambs and all that, he's going to be able to deliver me also from this Philistine. So verse 38. So Saul clothed David. Oh, let me back up. What does Saul tell David? Go, and the Lord bless you. I don't know how he said this, whether it was sarcastically or whether it was with sincerity or what. We don't see how he did it in the context, but you know, it's certainly possible that Saul said, okay, David, Lord bless you. I mean, it's possible he said that. Or he could have said, oh, David, Lord bless you. I mean, I don't know how he said it, but he's sending David on. But before he sends David on, look what he does. Verse 38. So Saul clothed David with his armor, and he put bronze helmet on his head, and he clothed him with a coat of mail. So he puts all of his armor on David. Now, if you remember, Saul is set a head and a shoulders above everybody else in height. So this is some big armor that he's putting on young little David. So already there's going to be a problem there. And we'll see that David has trouble walking around in it because he hadn't tested him. He wasn't used to walking around in armor. He's used to being a shepherd and running after sheep and things. And so he's introduced to this armor. And why do you think it is that Saul wanted to give David his armor? Well, I think that there might be a couple reasons there. One is that he might be trying to protect him. He feels, look, that's what I would do. If I was going out against Goliath, I would put on the biggest, baddest armor I could possibly find. I mean, look at Goliath. He's got on this biggest, baddest armor. He's got the spearhead that's 15 pounds. And, I mean, if I'm going to go out against someone like that, I will at least have the best armor on. So maybe looking at it from that perspective. But I wonder if also he's thinking, look, if David goes out there wearing my armor and defeats Goliath, I wonder if everybody will think it's me. I think that's probably what Saul's thinking. He's probably thinking, you know, if this guy goes out and actually defeats this thing, he'll get all the glory. And then where will that leave me? So maybe if I put on my arm on him, people will think it's me out there fighting. So they give him all this armor. But what happens? Verse 40. Or verse 39, David fastened the sword to his armor. He tried to walk, for he had not tested them. And David said to Saul, I can't wear these things, for I have not tested them. So David took them off. Then he took a staff in his hand. He chose for himself five smooth stones from the brook. Now, why did he take five stones? Why didn't he just take one? It only took one to kill Goliath, right? We'll see. Why did he take five? Well, I think maybe he took the other ones just in case. He didn't know whether it was going to be needed to shoot five of Goliath or whether he's only going to need to shoot one or what it was going to take. So he took necessary preparations for that, right? And so he wasn't stupid. It wasn't like he was rejecting all means of fighting, but he certainly took a few. And then there's other possibilities of why he took those stones, but it's interesting to note he took five of them. Put them in the shepherd's bag, in the pouch which he had, with the sling was in his hand, and he drew near the Philistine. So the Philistine came and began to draw near David, and the man who bore the shield went before him. And when the Philistines looked about and saw David, he disdained him. Disdain means he mocked him. Looked at him, started laughing. For he was only a youth, ruddy and good looking. Now there is some debate of what ruddy means. Most of the commentators I have looked at think that it means that he had rosy cheeks. I mean, David was a baby-faced looking guy. If you look at Goliath, Goliath was probably a hardened warrior. I mean, the way I picture him maybe is scar across his face, you know. When he was a boy trying to beat up somebody or something, you know. And maybe nose a little crooked, you know. Just kind of a big, ugly guy. David, on the other hand, just the opposite. Baby face, rosy cheeks, you know. Most Israelites wore beards, and we didn't know that David wore a beard later on. But this time, maybe he didn't even have enough facial hair. He comes out there just this young guy, and Goliath looks at him and says, "Ha, you? You're the champion of Israel? You've got to be kidding. This is going to be easy." So what does he say? So the Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you've come out to me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his God. You see, David had a staff, right? And the staff to Goliath probably was just a stick. How are you going to fight me with that? You've got to be kidding. So verse 44. And the Philistine said to David, "Come to me and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field." All right, so now they're doing this, you know, macho talk up. You know, if you play basketball or football against somebody, you know, and like, "You're going down, boy." Well, that's what they're saying, right? That's what Goliath, "You're going down, boy. I'm going to take you out." So verse 45, then David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with the sword, with the spear, with the javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defiled." Well, which one's coming with more power? David's coming with more power. Verse 46. "This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you and take your head from off you. And this day I will give the carcasses of the camp of the Philistines to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, and all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel." What's David's perspective? Is he going out there for his own glory? Is he going out there so that he might be able to be raised up and say, "Hey, great David, way to go, David"? He's going out there so the name of God might be magnified. He sees it not as the battle between him and Goliath. He sees the battle between God and Goliath. Verse 47. "Then all this assembly shall know that the Lord does not save with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into my hand." You see, he's coming, understanding that God is the one who's fighting this thing. He doesn't need the best of swords and spears and armor and helmets and all this kind of stuff. What does he need? He just needs the power of God. So verse 48. "So it was when the Philistine arose and came to draw near to meet David, that David hurried and ran to meet him. Then David," verse 49, "put his hand in his bag, took out a stone, slung it, and struck the Philistine in his forehead. So the stone sank into his forehead, and he fell on the face of the earth." So David prevailed over the Philistine with the sling of the stone, struck the Philistine and killed him, but there was no sword in David's hand. Therefore David ran, stood over the Philistine, took his sword, drew it out of its sheath, and killed him, cut off his head. You know, we don't have any mention of the armor bearer. I wonder what happened to the armor bearer as soon as Goliath fell. He's out of there, right? So much for Goliath. "And when the Philistines," verse 51, "saw that their champion was dead, they fled." Now, what was the agreement? Remember the agreement Goliath said? "You pick yourself a champion, you come out and fight against me, whoever wins, the other team, or the other side, will serve that team, that side." And yet when David conquers Goliath, what happens? Do all the Philistines say, okay, we give up. Here's our arms. We're your servants. They turn one around. Verse 52. Now the men of Israel and Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines as far as the entrance of the valley of the gates of Ekron. And the wounded of the Philistines fell upon the road of Sharaim, even as far as Gath and Ekron. Then the children of Israel returned from chasing the Philistines, and they plundered their tents. And David took the head of the Philistine and brought it to Jerusalem, but he put his armor in his tent. He's like, oh, I got to save this armor as a souvenir. But he takes the head back, proof that he actually conquered him. Verse 55, when Saul saw David going out against the Philistines, he said to Abner, the commander of the army, Abner, whose son is this youth? In other words, he sees David going out. Now, he knew David in the sense of he knew that David was the one who was playing the harp for him. David had come and introduced himself, said he is the son of Jesse. But now I think what he's asking here is he's asking, hey, what do you know about this family? If this guy comes and conquers him, my daughter is going to marry this guy. I got to know a little bit more about this family. And I think that's the reason he's asking that. So Abner said, as your soul lives, O king, I do not know. So it was verse 56. So the king said, inquire whose son this young man is. Then as David returned from the slaughter of the Philistines, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the head of the Philistines in his hand. And Saul said to him, whose son are you, young man? So David answered, I am the son of your servant Jesse the Bethlehemite. And then I'm sure he explained more detail who that was, because now he was going to be the son-in-law of the king. And what a great way for him to present himself as the suitor to his daughter, as being the champion who killed Gath, or the Goliath of Gath. So in 1 Samuel chapter 16, verse 7, what did we read? But the Lord said to Samuel, do not look at the outward appearance or physical stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord does not see as man sees. For man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. David was known as a man after God's own heart. Why was that? I believe it is because he saw things from God's perspective. And in comparison to Saul, who saw things from human perspective, from the very beginning when they raised up Saul, the people of Israel wanted a king who would do what? Lead them out to battle. Be like all the other nations. They wanted a king who would look like all the other nations' kings, head and shoulder above the rest. But when God chose a king, who did he choose? He chose David. A man who would see things from God's perspective. Who would be able to look at Goliath and realize that he was one who was defying the armies of God. The one who was mocking Israel and said, we can't have that. All of Israel looked at the situation from a human perspective. From the outward appearance. Goliath was their worst nightmare. Because from an outward perspective, he was invincible. There was no champ that'd go out and fight against him. David's brothers looked at David from the outward appearance. They said, look, you're a young guy. You're just my little brother. You can't go out. I mean, how many of you have little brothers? And your little brother tries to tempt something. You think, come on, you can't do that. And then they do it. Doesn't that frustrate you? Especially if you haven't been able to do it. I used to, of course, do that with my older brother all the time. But anyway, they sometimes little brothers have a tendency to do that. But they looked at him from the perspective of being just a little brother, incapable of doing anything. Because they looked at it from a human perspective and not from God's perspective. And then Goliath, he looked at things from a human perspective also, didn't he? When he saw David come out before him, he didn't realize he was coming out in the power of God. He came, said, look, you got stones. You're coming out here with a stick and stone. What's that going to do against me? He saw from man's perspective, not God's. Only David saw things from God's perspective. He saw Israel with the heart of cowardice. He saw Goliath as a defier of God with a wicked heart. He saw God as a great deliverer. And as a result, he was able to exercise that faith and glorify God. So there are a couple of important applications for us. And these will be quick. The first one is this. What is your perspective? How do you see things, particularly the challenges that come before you? You can have the perspective of Israel and Saul who were afraid of the challenge because they saw the challenge from a human perspective. or you can have the perspective of David, who saw the challenge as just something to defeat, something to overcome by the power of God. Life is all about what we see. Do you see things from the perspective of man or God? Do you look from the outward appearance or at the heart? One of the ways that you can tell what perspective you might have is to see how you react to things that are impressive. I mean, Goliath was impressive, wasn't he, from a human perspective? Sometimes people really get impressed over other things. Think about how many people tried to keep up with the Joneses. You've heard of that materially, right? We look around our neighbors. I remember when I was doing financial services, and I would meet in someone's home, and you'd drive up to their house, and they'd have, you know, two new cars out front, maybe a BMW and a new Toyota SUV or something. You're thinking to yourself, man, these guys got to drive a nice house, you know, brick house, two-story. You're thinking, man, this is great. You go into the house, no furniture. You think, what in the world? Why is there no furniture in this house? You know why? They couldn't afford it. But on the outside, boy, they looked good, didn't they? It's all about impressions. Don't get caught up in appearances. There's more to a book than its cover, isn't there? You've heard that saying before? Out west, they talk about it being those that have big hats and no cattle. In other words, you can see people out there who pretend to be cowboys. Walk around with their big, huge Stetson hats out there, right? Big cowboy boots. Man, they look the part. But they wouldn't know what a cattle was if it hit in the face. And you've got other guys out there that, you know, they're just cattle ranchers, you know. And they've got rugged old hats, rugged old boots. You'd never know it. But they've got thousands of acres of cattle. What's the difference? It's all about impression. I remember my dad told me one time, it's not the size of the dog in the fight that matters. It's the size of the fight in the dog that matters. Pretty good wisdom, isn't it? Last night I got embarrassed. Lee mentioned this in Sunday school class, but we had a awards ceremony for Upwards basketball, and they had these group from Liberty that was like these stunt basketball players where they would do, they were called SOAR, and they would jump off trampolines and do flips and do jumps and back, you know, back dunks and all this kind of stuff. And it was pretty cool. So they would, they had some of the basketball players, the kids come out, and they had some of the coaches come out. Well, I'm a coach. And so when they had coaches, you know, my wife's going, you know, like this to me. And so, of course, they chose me to go out there, and I get the basketball. I'm thinking to myself, I can do this. This is no problem at all. I can handle this. I mean, it's just a trampoline. I mean, you know, I can touch the backboard without a trampoline. I mean, this is going to be a piece of cake. So I run down the line. I hit the trampoline. Boom! I hit the mat flat. I didn't even get the ball out of my hand. I was so embarrassed. Right? I made a horrible impression. But my heart was in it, let me tell you. You see, sometimes it's not the outward appearance that matters. My friends, what is your perspective of life? Do you look at things from the outward appearance, or do you look at things from the inside? Secondly, the second question we need to ask ourselves is, what's in your heart? Are you all about what's on the outside and making that good impression? Are you just for show? Saul was not able to go against Goliath, not because he didn't have the right weapons or the right tools. He had better tools and better weapons than David did. But why wasn't he able to go out? Because it's all about show. He didn't have the right heart. David was able to come against Goliath, resting not in his own physical strength, but in the power of God that was in him. Jesus, regarding the Pharisees, said that they were like whitewashed tombs. They looked good on the outside, but on the inside, they stank. That's the idea of that illustration. Goliath was like this. Saul was like this. David's brothers were like this. But David was different. They all looked like warriors on the outside, but they weren't on the inside. Don't just go through the motions. Don't just dress up for church, come down here, participate in worship service, but not have God on the inside. What good is that? There's no power in that kind of life. Just here for impressions. So how is it that we have a heart like David's? Have a heart that when the challenges come, when the enemy comes against us and defies God, and we rise up and say, enough of that. How do we have the kind of heart that can go out and fight in that kind of battle? The scriptures tell us, take up the armors of God. Ephesians chapter 6. Take up the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God. Shield of faith. The helmet of salvation. Breastplate of righteousness. The belt of truth. Shod our feet with the preparation of the gospel of peace. See, those are all spiritual things. They all come from having a relationship with the Lord. That's how we're able to go and defeat the enemy. That's how we're able to walk in righteousness. It's when we have a heart that's right with God. Examine your heart. Make sure that you are walking not from the outside, but from the inside. Let us pray.
And with that, that has been Steve Donahue with the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. What will you do today to build your legacy?
Our country is lost, and it's not without cost, for there's many who struggle every day. And I think that it's time we start crying for our nation and bow our heads and pray. If today you lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see? What happened in the dash between your birth and death? What will you do to change your legacy? But just like the plant that withers away, we will leave many seeds behind. If today you lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see? What happened in the dash between your birth and death? What will you do to change your legacy? What will you do to change your legacy?